time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up with the Saturday morning sun, plop down the living room floor with a big bowl of sugary cereal, and watch our favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm not Joseph.
He's not.
I'm Chris.
The real Chris. The original Chris. The animated series.
I wish.
And this morning, we watched Batman, the animated series.
That animated series is real, not Chris.
That one's for real. Yeah, that's not Chris. Yep. Doesn't involve him in any way.
And this was suggested by Thomas via email. And this is always hard to say. Harley Sally Gorales via Instagram. And so they'd both chosen this. But we're not doing pretty much any of the episodes they picked this week because per Harley Sally Gorales's request. Man, that's a mouthful.
Wait, hold on. Pause for a second. So Harley Sally Girl Alice, that's what it is?
Harley Sally Gur Alice.
Gur Alice. Okay. All right. Go on.
Harley Sally Gur Alice, for her request, wanted us to do episodes of this show, but Harley Quinn-centric episodes. And Thomas's random pick was also a Harley Quinn episode, and it was one of the same ones that she picked. So we talked over, we decided, hey, you know what? We're going to do one episode of Batman the Animated Series the way we always do, and then we're going to do a second episode that's going to be all Harley episodes to satisfy both of them, and we're hoping it satisfies all of you, too, because Harley's a great character and started in the cartoon and not in the comics, which is almost always the complete opposite of what happens with comics and cartoons where those are involved. So next week we will do the ones chosen by our listeners, but this week we're doing Batman the Animated Series, the regular version.
The regular version, indeed.
The regular version, yes.
So the show Batman the Animated Series ran from 92 to 95, created and developed by... Well, originally, Batman was created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, and the series was created by Bruce Timm and Eric Randomski, produced by Warner Brothers Animation, ran for 2 seasons, 85 episodes. This is how it works. 65 episodes were season one, and then season two was 20 episodes, but season two, it was renamed The Adventures of Batman and Robin because WB wanted to push Robin more as a character, and it was actually, he was a kid in the second portion of it. I believe he was Tim Drake at that point.
Well, yeah, because like in the first season, we had Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
And by season two, Dick Grayson was now older and took on Nightwing and had kind of denounced Batman. And then we had Tim Drake. It was interesting. I remember a lot about this show, so...
Yeah, the idea was like kids like seeing other kids in cartoons, so let's push Robin as a kid so that more kids will watch. Yes.
Which was the opposite because I hate Robin. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Robin is probably my least favorite character. Like, almost any iteration of Robin, I pretty much dislike them all equally.
Huh.
Just because I don't like kids superheroes. I don't. I just don't, except the Runaways from Marvel, because they're fantastic. And Miss Marvel. So, I mean, she's a teenager. She's not a kid. But anyway, I don't generally like kids as superheroes. They annoy me, and they make dumb decisions because they're not grown up enough. And I'm like, you guys are dumb. Get out of here. So I don't like Robin. So don't make more Robins.
I like Robin as a character. The only problem I have is Batman's judgment on using children in his war on crime.
It's pretty flawed.
Pretty flawed indeed. Yeah. But
it's kind of creepy.
That aside, I mean, Batman's a great character and we're going to talk about him. So the animated series ran on the networks Fox Kids, Cartoon Network, Disney XD, The Hub, and WB, of course. For a short synopsis, and this is, I mean, there's really no need for this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. The Dark Knight battles crime in Gotham City with occasional help from Robin and Batgirl. That's the synopsis.
Nice. And I like that. That's all true. That's good. That's very good. Oh, I should also include that. So Thomas also asked that we do World's Finest, which is a almost like movie length crossover between this show and Superman's animated series.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it, but we're going to wait until we do Superman first, and then we'll do World's Finest at some point after that. So Thomas, I promise we will get there. It's just going to be a little bit longer for that particular one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Chris, who are some of the actors that played in the show?
I'm glad you asked. So Bruce Wayne, aka Batman, was voiced by Kevin Conroy, who voices Batman and the good majority of cartoons from the early 90s, or from the 90s to the early 2000s, as well as the Arkham series for Xbox, PlayStation, and PC, which are amazing, just as good as the show, because it's pretty much this show, but darker and grittier, because it's made by the same people, basically, and that just made it amazing. Alfred Pennyworth was voiced by Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Commissioner James Gordon, voiced by Bob Hastings, who has done lots of popular television shows from the 60s and 70s, and he was the voice of Archie Andrews in the radio production of the same name after World War II, which was kind of interesting. So before he really got into acting.
Nice.
Summer Gleason, the reporter that pops up in like every episode, was voiced by Mary Devon, who's done lots of anime, including almost any version of Digimon. She's been in Big O and Ghost in the Shell, the standalone complex. Detective Harley Bullock, voiced by Robert Costanzo. The Joker, voiced by Mark Hamill. He's Luke Skywalker. I mean, come on. Yeah, you know who Mark Hamill is. Come on.
He's the trickster from The Flash.
Yeah, exactly. See, there's another one. Harvey Dent, voiced by Richard Mull. Harley Quinn, voiced by Arlene Sorkin, who's mostly known for her role on Days of Our Lives as Calliope Jones from 1984 all the way to 2010. That is a very long time to be on a soap opera and not die.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Selena Kyle, a.k.a. Catwoman, voiced by Adrienne Barbeau, who has done tons of famous John Carpenter movies such as The Thing, Escape from New York, and my personal favorite, The Fog. Poison Ivy, voiced by Diane Pershing. The Penguin, voiced by Paul Williams. Killer Croc, voiced by Aaron Kincaid, who actually was the voice of the Iron Sheik on Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling.
Oh.
Yeah, which that was one of the first shows we did. And I think the lowest rated cartoon we've had so far.
That or Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters.
I think they were both ones, maybe. But yeah. Dr. Kirk Langstrom, a.k.a. Man-Bat, voiced by Mark Singer, who has also done lots of 70s and 80s television, as well as played General Shreve on Arrow. And then finally, Dr. Victor Freeze, a.k.a. Mr. Freeze, was Michael Ansara, who is a TV actor from the 50s through the 90s, and voicing Mr. Freeze was actually his final role before his death.
Aw.
And you know what? Like, looking over this cast, a lot of them are either deceased or kind of in their last stages of life. Obviously, like Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy are still kicking, but a lot of these people are deceased or kind of, you know, in that stage of life where they're in their 80s to 90s. Because a lot of these people came from the television circuit. I mean, the early television circuit. I mean, we're talking 50s, 60s, 70s, things like that. So it's kind of interesting to think about, at least for me being only 30 years old and feeling like they couldn't have been that old when they were voicing these characters, but they are much older than I thought, or most of them were a lot older than I thought they were.
Yeah, but you also got to remember that this was from 92, so this is a while back.
We're still young. We're still young. Shut up. Shut up. I'm not crying. You're crying. But, you know, though, this, like, it kind of gives credence to, like, why the voice acting on this show is really superb compared to almost any other cartoon. Like, the voice acting in this is top-notch from every single character. It's because these are extremely seasoned veterans of acting that are voicing this show. There's not a lot of, like, fresh faces in this show. It's mostly very seasoned people.
They also all recorded in a room, which is not entirely commonplace. It happens, but they all recorded in a room together when they were recording their lines, as opposed to just alone while they were doing it.
Which makes a lot of sense, because then if somebody says something one way, the other person can react as appropriate as possible.
Right.
Whereas you could kind of lose that if you're recording separately, which does happen sometimes. And there's been shows that we've watched where it feels fairly obvious that it was not done together.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel natural. Yeah, it's called an ensemble recording is when they're doing it together.
I think I would prefer ensemble recordings, honestly. I always feel like you get the best out of that.
I feel like that's the way to go. I mean, there's got to be a reason, like schedule conflict or reasons for not to happen. But if possible, I would always say go for that.
I'm sure lots of schedule conflict.
So for a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Batman cereal, Kevin Conroy is the first person in animation to use two distinct voices to portray Bruce Wayne and Batman. And that's something that Michael Keaton had done in the Batman movies, but those are live action. This is the first time being animated that Batman and Bruce Wayne have had separate voices.
I like it.
Robin / Dick Grayson had to be older, at least originally, because of censorship rules against showing endangerment of children, something Batman obviously doesn't care that much about.
He's like known for endangering children. I mean, if he has a superpower, that's what it is.
Right.
Putting kids in harm's way.
To create the eerie nighttime feeling, the background painters used dark paper instead of traditional white paper. And this also allowed them to save time from painting large portions of the black color, as most of the scenes are set at night anyway. And the animators coined the term dark deco for this art style.
And I love it. It's one of my, it's probably my favorite art style of any cartoon ever.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely still holds up too.
Yeah.
This cartoon has the most spinoffs of any animated TV show ever. They include Batman Mask of the Phantasm, Superman, The New Batman Adventures, Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero, Batman Beyond, Static Shock, Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, Justice League, The Zeta Project, Batman The Mystery of Batwoman, The Justice League, and The Justice League Unlimited. So those are all spun off of basically this show, which started the Timverse because of Bruce Timm, obviously, the artist and one of the original creators for this show. Kind of branching off that, the show's first opening sequence is essentially a remake of the pilot used to sell the show to Warner Brothers. In the pilot, Batman foils a jewelry heist on a rooftop and leaves the robbers tied up for the police. And the pilot can be seen as a special feature on volume one of the DVD, but you essentially are seeing it as the intro, which is an amazing intro.
Like, I keep saying this, like, oh, this is my favorite of this, but this is my favorite intro ever.
Yeah.
You're going to hear a lot of me saying this is my favorite.
This is my favorite, yeah. Same here. Batman the Animated Series was never specifically like called out in the intro. Like it never, you know how in most shows it'll say like the title at the end of the intro or something? That never happens in at least in the season one part. When it turns into Batman and Robin, then it starts to show on there. But before not at all.
You didn't need to, man. You knew what this was.
Yeah, you knew it was Batman.
And you know what this is.
You know. So Chris, obviously you have memories of this. Why don't you share some?
Okay, so this is probably one of my favorite cartoons of all time. I watched this all the time after school. And, you know, I have this very distinct memory that I remember I shared this on another podcast that I'm on that Joseph and I used to be on. And this memory was me coming home from school as a child during the winter time and sitting in my living room front of my dad's big armchair, and it's about like 5 o'clock, but because it's winter, it's already dark out. The room is all super warm from the heater. I can hear my mom making dinner in the kitchen while I'm watching Batman the Animated Series. It is such a strong, like crazy strong memory, and just about as nostalgic as I can get. But I mean, this is the show that made me, I'm a big villain guy, and this is the show that made me love villains, and there's so many good ones. You got Joker and Harley and Clayface and Killer Croc. Those are all my favorite villains, again, with the favorites. But and I got to credit this show, along with X-Men, the animated series, for my interest in comic books at all, because I never would have become like the kind of nerd I am without watching those two cartoons. So like, I owe a lot of who I turned into to watching this cartoon.
Yeah, and as far as villains go, it's because like the villains in this show have layers to them. They're not just one-sided like someone like Sawboss. Like they
Sawboss.
They are able, I mean, they have different emotional, you can connect with them, and to some extent you can understand why they're doing what they're doing, which is something that lets you, it just makes a stronger villain no matter what. Yeah. And a lot of kids' cartoons, it really is just like very black and white, good versus evil. But here there's some gray, and that's what makes it really interesting.
You know, they could have easily made this, like, dumbed this down for kids, but instead it's like they treated kids with more respect. Like, they're like, no, kids are smarter. They'll understand the gray area. It doesn't need to be black and white. They'll get it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first cartoon that I felt like, you know, achieved that. And it's very obvious that they thought that way.
Yeah, for sure. This is one of the cartoons that really, like you were saying, kind of defined my childhood. And the influence carried over into adulthood, where an example of that would be like when I read a Batman comic to this day, the voices are still the actors from this cartoon, no matter what character it is. Yeah. Especially the standouts, like you were saying, like Kevin Conroy is Batman and Mark Hamill is the Joker. But whenever I read, you know, Two-Face, it's the Two-Face from this series. Whenever I read Clayface, same thing. Just any of the villains, Penguin even, any of the villains sound like that in my head because that's the way that their dialogue is. Not only is it the nostalgia from it, but also just how good it was and how it really, even though Batman had been around for a long time, this is what introduced Batman to me in so many dimensions that it really allowed me to connect better with the character.
Oh, same here. And I have the same thing where anytime I read anything Batman related or read something that, you know, maybe I'm reading a different comic and one of the villains pops up, it doesn't matter what comic it is. If it's that character, I hear the voices from this show.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's always going to be that way. And, you know, I didn't mention it because this character wasn't in any of the episodes that we watched for today's show. But the voice of Clayface was Ron Perlman, which I think is
really
interesting to include. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, and as soon as I read that, because I knew that for a while, but because I read it a couple years ago. But when I saw that, I was like, oh, man, yeah, I totally hear it now. And it's, yeah, it's so good.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
What's great and also unfortunate about the fact that we read these characters or kind of just distinguish these characters as no matter what media they're in now as voices from this series is actors who try to play them or not tried actors who do play them who are not the original actors. We flaw them just because they're not the people that we want them to be. Even if they do a great job, it's hard. So that's the double-edged sword of it is it's tough to move on to someone else, even when the acting is just, you know, perfectly fine or even great. It's hard to break away from what we know.
Yeah, that's something that I think like younger generations won't have as much problem with, but the generation that like us that grew up with this, we're always going to compare it back to this. And in like in like 40 more years, we're going to be like, who's this? That's not my Batman. My Batman's Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I need to change a diaper.
Right.
I turned kind of British there for some reason. I'm going to be old and British when
old
I'm 80.
Old and British. Yeah. You just turn British 70. Eventually. You catch British. Yeah.
It's going to happen.
So
I'm going to be eating fish and chips.
I love fish and chips actually still.
Yeah. I don't like fish actually.
Oh, what a shame. You can never be British. But let's go ahead and talk about the episodes we watched for today's show. Very first episode, highest rated episode. And finally, random religion chosen episode. Order may vary depending on how this episode falls chronologically, but of course, we're at the start of the very first episode, being On Leather Wings, Season 1, Episode 1. A mysterious bat-like creature terrorizes Gotham City, causing the police force to pursue Batman. The Dark Knight must find the real perpetrator to clear his name.
Eventually, our listeners are going to need a translator because you say it so fast.
I'm trying. I'm challenging myself to try faster and faster.
Do it as quick as possible. Yeah.
For my ultimate goal of becoming an auctioneer.
There you go. That's the dream.
Isn't it, though?
So I'm going to start it because I've been singing praises for the last 20 minutes or whatever. I'd need to point out something here that I don't have beef with, but I thought was a weird decision. That is the very first villain that we get in the Batman the Animated Series being Man-Bat. I thought was a very strange decision. You know, I get why they did it, because they were using this idea of introducing Batman to us with another creature that he's being mistaken for, you know, to cause some problems where it's like, oh, is he all good? Is he all bad? I don't know. But still, like, out of all the villains, man, Man-Bat is like, he's D-Squad, man. He's not even like the top of the list. So I thought it was a weird choice.
I think it's also to show that this isn't your typical Batman, and they're not copying things like word for word or panel for panel or whatever. Like, this is an original thing, and here's an intro with a new character. But it also has, like, we do see, I think this is the episode, we see Harvey Dent in this episode.
Yes, we do.
As well.
In a great way, flipping his coin.
Yeah, that's such a cool intro to that character, just because, like, being a kid, you have no idea who that is. I mean, you know the name, maybe you've heard it in other things, but if you're not into the comics, or you hadn't read the comics previously, you wouldn't know who that eventually becomes. And so seeing him flipping that coin is just such a, being one of my favorite characters currently, like, that was just such a cool nod to what was to come.
It was. And, like, you know, I enjoyed this episode quite a bit. I just thought, you know, man, Bat is such a weird choice. But it does bring across the point, like you said, that this is not, you know, that this is a certain type of Batman. I mean, this is a Batman where we're not afraid to get unrealistic and have someone turn into a big bat creature, you know, like werewolf style. So it's like, okay, all things go in this cartoon. You're going to get magic. You're going to get weird sciencey stuff, like really sci-fi things. Like, you're going to get everything. So in that respect, it makes a lot of sense to have a villain like that right up front. So mm-hmm. I'll give him that.
Yeah. And even though it is a strange choice for the beginning, it doesn't, like you said, take away from the episode. It's still a great episode. And just to describe it a little bit. So this security guard in this like pharmaceutical company or pharmaceutical like office building gets attacked and thrown out a window. The night watchman, I guess, gets thrown out a window, and all he can describe the perpetrator as is a bat. The assumption is, in the same way that Spider-Man is put into like a negative spotlight by J. Jonah Jameson, at this point, Harvey Bullock, Detective Bullock, is sort of the J. Jonah Jameson to Batman, where he is, you know, he's against this vigilante. I mean, really kind of everybody is in a way at this point, because this is a Batman's kind of a fresh idea, I guess, to the police force, to Gotham PD, and to Gotham in general. So
right.
He's a scapegoat and easy to attack. And they even kind of say, I think Commissioner Gordon says, like, putting this in the paper, because that's what Bullock does, is kind of put it in the paper that they're after the Batman. Putting it in the paper makes him aware that we're coming for him, which means that they had already been sort of after him or pursuing him in some way.
Well, there's one thing that we got to mention really quick, because this will come up later. Well, that guard that got thrown out of the building by the creature, he was recording his voice. He was like singing a song or something.
Mm-hmm.
And drops his cassette player or his voice recorder. Which Batman's going to find, and that is going to lead him basically to what he needs to know, which is really interesting. Because, so, like, Batman is, well, the police have declared Batman, you know, kind of an outlaw sort of thing, or like vigilante, and Bullock's trying to take him down because Bullock is, you know, like you said, he's just convinced this is all Batman. It's not a creature, it's Batman. Batman's like, oh, well, that's not cool. So
yeah,
Batman's trying to stay, you know, he's staying low, but still trying to do detective work and stuff like that. So he has to break into the building to gather clues. He finds that voice recorder. He finds a hair. He takes those he actually goes to this, I don't want to say clinic, but he goes to this lab and he talks to a scientist there, a specialist in bats, because he plays the noise on the, or he plays that vocal recorder and he hears the guy. Then he hears this noise that kind of sounds like a bat, kind of sounds like, you know, something else.
Kind of sounds like an inhuman creature.
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't sound like a bat at all, unless it's like, I don't know, it just sounded like a demon.
Yeah, he goes to this lab and he brings the hair and the tape, and he had already done his own research and he knows that it doesn't match anything, any known creature.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings it to them. They're like, oh, we've got this guy, Dr. Langstrom, who's like our specialist and bats and stuff. And then they take a look into it and they basically report back to Batman later. And they're like, yeah, it's a hair off just a regular brown bat. And the voice recorder is a bat. And at the same time, there's like a bird
yeah,
making a noise, like, and stuff
a
mix like that.
Between a bat and a starling.
Right. And it's those lies that, because Batman had already done his research, knew that Langstrom was lying. So all that stuff, like, basically brought him to, like, okay, he's hiding something.
Well, he didn't know that Langstrom was involved really at all. He knew that Dr. March, who was the older gentleman, was lying. And,
oh, right. Yeah. They were like lab partners or whatever.
But, yeah. Because yeah. He's the one, Dr. March is the one who seems the most suspicious right off the bat.
So Bruce Wayne goes there to confront them and talk about it. And Langstrom's there and just like, oh, well, I'm going to turn into a creature now. And then I'm going to attack you.
I mean, it's your basic kind of, I say basic, there's more complexity to it, but I found a way to improve on humanity by combining our DNA with the bat's DNA. And so he's essentially a werewolf in, so a werebat, I guess, in some sense of the word.
That. Yeah. I like that a lot. As this is all going on, and we were talking about Bullock and Gordon earlier. It's a great introduction to those two characters because, like, we get the Bullock that's just gunning to pin everything on Batman. He wants to take Batman down. And Gordon, who's the commissioner, basically telling Bullock to stand down, and Bullock's not having it and kind of going above him to get what he wants by going to the mayor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The power struggle between them is very cool because you've got this. So you got this whole political thing going on the side, this power struggle between the commissioner and between a detective, not listening to each other, ignoring each other, and going about this and just constantly undermining each other. And it's getting them really nowhere. But yeah, I mean, it just shows you how thick-headed Bullock is. So it's a great introduction to his character. And that Gordon knows that Batman is doing things for the better good, regardless of if he's a vigilante or not. Batman's doing what's right. He's doing what the law can't necessarily do. And he's trying to give Batman the room to do it so long as he does it in a just way.
Right. I mean, it's the Batman that we all know, which is like no killing, no guns, things like that. So even though it is vigilante justice, it's done in maybe the best way you could do it in Batman's situation.
Right.
This is also where it came before this, but we also got to see, like I said, Harvey Dent, who is a district attorney. So Bullock brings him in to essentially say, hey, if we get Batman, I need you to be the one who puts him in jail. Like, right. I need your help. And so he's got really the city on his side, Bullock does, because he's kind of inducing their following with fear of the Batman or the unknown, what's not known about the Batman. He puts together a task force. Is this where he goes to the lab and then they kind of bring together, or Bullock's task force just all goes in there?
So Bullock sends his task force to the lab after Batman because there was a couple at the lab, like a couple of employees that were sneaking around to make out, and they caught Batman entering and called the police. So Bullock pretty much sent everybody.
That's right.
And this was when Batman was still collecting those clues, like the voice recorder and the hair and things like that.
Okay, so this was before the actual Man-Bat reveal.
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cluster in that you got three sides to the whole thing. You got the creature, you got Batman, and then you got Bullock. And Gordon's, I would kind of lump in with Batman's side because he's trying to let Batman do his thing. But so it's like three sides all trying to accomplish something at the same time, and it's just kind of a cluster at point.
We do get to see also Batman. So Batman is in that lab originally when Bullock sends his task force in, and they throw in this sort of tear gas, but they throw it into a room that's got a lot of like flammable explosives.
It's like chemicals.
Flammable chemicals that will explode. And so when he does it, there's another guard that goes in to get Batman as well. And so Batman easily could have just jumped out the window himself and jumped to safety. But instead, he makes sure to grab the person who was in there with him and dive out to save his life, even though he's sort of putting his own at risk. So this is a very Batman move. And that's where you see, it's a great intro episode because it shows you all the sides to everything. So you've got Batman as the vigilante and kind of the inducer of fear in villains, but he is also a good person and really will save anyone if he's able.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of comes later too, because when Batman and Well, he ends up confronting Langstrom in the end because, you know, he walks in, Langstrom morphs into a man bat in front of him, which I gotta say, the transformation looked great.
It looked really cool.
It was a flawless animation. Like, I was very impressed with how good it looked.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, of course, there's going to be a big old fight, and you can imagine Man-Bat's flying, and Batman ropes his legs and is flying with him, which is great.
Yeah.
Brings him down. When he finally does defeat Man-Bat, he doesn't turn the guy in. He, you know, he takes him back to the Batcave. He finds a way to basically isolate and remove the virus that causes Langstrom to turn, and doesn't say anything to the police, gives him back, basically hands him back over to his wife and tells her that everything's going to be all right. So the fact that he could have taken him to jail or done something more to him and didn't, yeah, that really shows what kind of person he is.
Right.
So,
and he's like, it's over for now. Like, he gives you the opening that Man-Bat will probably be back, but for now, it's all good.
Yeah, you know, no villain is ever going to stay down.
No.
Even if he's an accidental villain like Langstrom. So, you know, though, like, I got to say, this is another thing, is that sometimes in this show, if a villain is supposed to be a secret, it's usually given away pretty easily because of their eyebrows have this, like, pointed shape in the middle that makes them look really cocky and arrogant. So they just have this like look to them and you're like, well, that's the villain. Like, that's the guy turning into the creature right there. Like, you usually know really quickly.
Well, the lead on is you're supposed to suspect Dr. March originally because of how defensive he's being against everything.
Right.
And so that was a really cool way, again, to treat a kid's show because it gives it a little air of mystery to it. And kind of lets the kids, even though it's fairly obvious, but it lets kids kind of be detectives themselves and solve the case along with Batman, which is very cool.
A clue. Oh, we didn't talk about Alfred. Alfred is hilariously sarcastic through this entire thing.
Alfred sounds a little bit different in this first episode.
Okay, so there are three episodes where he was voiced by somebody else.
Oh, was this one of them then?
And I think so. I think it was the first three episodes of the show. I might be wrong, but I think it was the first three.
It's not a striking difference that it's like, oh, that's not Alfred at all. It's just like there's the cadence to his voice is different than the Alfred that I remember.
It's very slight, but it is there. But yeah, Alfred's super sarcastic and has a very dry humor, which is great. It's funny, too, because Bruce tends to just kind of like ignore it and just carry on the conversation as normal instead of like acknowledging that Alfred's poking fun at him.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was great. I love that the exchanges between those two.
Yeah, they were really good exchanges. And it humanized Bruce a little bit more versus some of the comics where he's just straight like stone cold. In the show, he's got some humor to him and he'll joke around with Alfred as they kind of have a little bit of banter back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. And he will crack a smile when Alfred says something. You know, you'll see a quick grin on Bruce's face, which, and you think about anything, any other Batman thing outside of the comics, like you look at the last several movies we've got, you'll never see that because they're like, it's not dark enough. People don't smile in real life.
Right. So let's move on to the second episode we watched for today's show. Heart of Ice, season one, episode 14.
Okay, so the actual highest rated episode was a two-parter, but since we're doing 2 weeks of Batman the Animated Series, we feel like that would be overkill if we did 4 episodes within this one. So we went with the next highest rated, which is Heart of Ice, and it also, I mean, it's a big deal for the series, so we felt like this would be the one to go for it.
Yeah, for sure. And this one, it's pretty well known, I would think, among Batman fans. And it was written by Paul Dini. This is really kind of where a lot of stuff that we've watched has been written by Paul Dini. Like even Ewoks, some of it was written by Paul Dini. I believe some of Teen Wolf, or if not Teen Wolf, then the show before that we watched, some of it was written by Paul Dini.
I think some of Green Lantern, the animated series, might have been also. I'm not sure. It was either Bruce Timm or Paul Dini worked on that one. also.
Yeah, I can't remember, but...
But somebody from the show did.
Yeah, so he's been all over the place, but I think it's really this show, animated series, Batman and the Animated Series, where he came into his own, where he's really started to be known amongst the fans of these cartoons. Right. And so then it's just like the team up of Paul Dini and Bruce Timm is one that is infamous at this point. It was
a perfect storm.
Perfect pairing. Yeah. So in this one, which is also just like you said about Harley Quinn being introduced in this series, this also it did this for a few villains, but especially Mr. Freeze, who kind of revitalized him entirely by redoing his origin story. And this is that origin story.
Yeah. You know, this is the only origin story of Mr. Freeze I know, because, you know, I didn't read any Batman comics prior to watching this cartoon series. And I've never gone back and read a lot of older Batman comics, except for some of the essentials, you know, like stuff Alan Moore did or Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale and stuff like that. But I never needed another Mr. Freeze origin. I don't need to know his original origin, because this was amazing. Yeah. I don't want it to get ruined.
And anytime there's been like a Mr. Freeze origin after this, it's been either directly this origin or at least very, very close to it. So this is one of those things that just came out of the show that was carried forward because of how great it was.
Yeah, you know, like they have done a similar origin for Mr. Freeze and everything after this. So some, like the horrible Batman movie that we won't speak about that had Arnold Schwarzenegger playing Mr. Freeze, they took a similar route as far as his origin. They did the same thing on Gotham, the show that's airing now. There's been other like adapted comic origins where it's been updated a little bit and changed, but they still kind of stick with this main story. So yeah, I think it's really cool, and it just shows how good at writing this was. And I might be wrong, I'm pretty sure that this episode in particular did win some sort of award.
I think you're right. I mean, if not, I definitely should have, but I'm pretty sure you're right. So
I'm going to look it up real quick.
The origin we're speaking of is Victor Freeze. It was the employee at Gothcorp. He was using company funds, and since he was a scientist there, to help to keep his terminally ill wife, Nora, alive in a cryogenic state. And cryogenic freezing is not something that was already invented. This was his sort of original invention. And so he, in testing this, he was essentially keeping her in a state of stasis until they could find a cure for her illness.
And real quick, yes, this did win an award. In fact, this episode actually won an Emmy for outstanding writing in an animated program.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's this episode like that's credited in particular with like putting this show on the map. So that'll tell you like how important this episode was to this series as a whole.
Definitely. So the way that we're introduced to this, we've got Mr. Freeze, who's out for revenge, and we don't know exactly what it is coming into it yet, but we know it has something to do with Gothcorp. There's a massive weapon that he's trying to build. At least Batman determines this by all these parts that are being stolen from these factories Batman's the world's greatest detective. So he immediately is like, oh, all these parts. Well, it's going to be a giant weapon. Like that's the only thing these parts could build.
Exactly. I got to say, so the introduction to Mr. Freeze in this episode is amazing. Cause like his voice, like, okay, pun only somewhat intended. His voice gives me the chills every time.
It's so memorable.
Oh, I know. And those red eyes from the goggles. Oh, yeah. My gosh. He's so menacing, not like big and scary, just eerie. And he talks so sophisticated, and his voice is distorted by the suit he's wearing, where it's very almost robotic in a way. And he speaks so eloquently. It gives me chills. Like, I can't say anything else than that. Chill out.
Ice to see you.
Ice to see you. We're making fun of Arnold, not this show.
No, that's not this show at all. But I don't know why they went that direction instead of just sticking with this, but whatever. That's not to debate here. So he's out on a personal vendetta against Gothcorp CEO Ferris Boyle, who we see shortly has wronged him in such a way where, and like I said at the beginning, like some of these villains are so relatable that it's almost understandable that they are doing what they're doing. And Mr. Freeze being one of those top candidates for that, because he was, like I said, was using company funds to help to keep his wife alive, which is understandable. And it's also a great scientific research to be creating cryogenic freezing. So I don't see why it wouldn't be something that they continue to allow him to do. But they were all about the final numbers and the where their money's going. And if it's not something that they're directly sponsoring, then they don't want any part of it. So they cut off his funding of this cryogenic freezing, supposedly weeks before. So eventually they come in and kind of just like strong arm him into stopping in such a way where when Victor Freeze tries to stop Boyle from, you know, turning off the machine, turning off his wife's life support, Freeze gets pushed into this mixture of chemicals. And then there's this like explosion. Boyle and his guards just kind of walk out and like, well, he's dead. Like they, I guess they just assume that without like checking.
Good riddance. Yeah. Ferris Boyle's just a sleazebag. And he's one of those guys that's just like, you know, I don't want to know the details. All I know is you didn't obey me and I don't care what you're doing. I'm not going to look into it. I'm just going to shut you down and destroy everything you did.
And the
out of spite, basically.
And the worst part about it is this Boyle guy is, in this episode, getting a humanitarian award.
Right.
Which is the exact opposite of what we now know is his character. So truly, he's the bigger villain in this episode in such an interesting way. Like, he's the top-notch corporate villain that people don't see the evils that are going on. And Mr. Freeze is the one who he's more demonized because he's the one who's coming out with the supposed evil in trying to take out Boyle.
Well, Freeze is he is the epitome of the man who was pushed too far and now has nothing left to lose because this guy basically took his wife from him.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, like, Freeze built up his wife, Nora, in such a way that she feels like, I don't know like about you, but to me, she feels like this like untouchable, like iconic thing. You know, I mean, literally you can't touch her because she's in a glass cylinder, but like there's so much like prestige given to her because she's such, you know, it's his prized possession as his wife. She's this like goddess to him, you know, in that way, like he would do absolutely anything. And so, like, anytime I hear the name Nora, I always think back to the episode, this episode of this show, and I think about Freeze's wife. And it's just, like, this really bittersweet story, you know, and just how devoted he was and how like, the struggle that he went to keep her alive only to lose and then how that broke him.
I mean, that's a great example of the amazing writing that was done because we don't ever see Nora moving, talking, or doing anything. She's literally frozen in this tank, and it's just the words used to describe her that make her sound like such an elegant, angelic figure, even. And that's
exactly,
it's like you said, whenever I hear the name Nora, that's who I think of too. And this is a frozen figure, and so that's the amazing writing around it. And how beautiful the words were that were used to describe her is that it's made her such a memorable and iconic figure.
That's like, even as the viewer, like you want to be able to protect her just like he does, and you can't. And like, man, you're just like, you're like, no, that's why, like, it really kind of like, I don't know. It really kind of hurts, like seeing what happens. You're just like, oh my God, because he's just trying so hard and then just gets shut down. And so you can completely sympathize with the route that Freeze goes, you know, like I can 100% understand why he gets put over the edge because of this. And he's like, I'm out for revenge and I'm basically going to kill him and destroy everything he's built. And what's interesting too, is we get this moment where Batman confronts him early on and Freeze basically tells Batman, I'm not here to take you down. Like I don't want to hurt you, but if you're in my way, then you're my enemy kind of thing. Like, you know, nothing's going to keep me from getting my revenge. So he has no beef with Batman whatsoever. Batman is just an obstacle that's keeping him from completing his mission.
Yeah, definitely. But We get to see here also in this scene where he is first fighting Batman, he accidentally freezes one of his henchmen's legs he kind of gets in the way. And this is where it's like, okay, so he really is like kind of emotionless now. Like his emotion has been drained by what has happened, and he's, you know, figuratively, you know, ice cold, is cold hearted now.
I knew you were going to go that route too.
Yeah. So the guy's legs are frozen and he's kind of crawling, like still alive, and he's crawling after him like, hey guys, like, you know, help me out. Cause Batman's kind of has a wall frozen around him where he's trapped as Freeze and the other henchmen are escaping. And they're like, leave him behind. Like he shouldn't have gotten the way, basically. So yeah.
He basically said, if like you're dumb enough to get frozen, then you're not good enough for me or something like that. And you know, that was honestly kind of a moment too, that it was almost like a sick to your stomach moment. Cause you're just like, oh man, he just left one of his guys out to hang, and who knows what's going to happen to this guy's legs. They're completely frozen. Cause if it wasn't like a kid's cartoon, I'd be like, well, that dude's losing his legs now, man.
Cause that's frostbite times 1,000,
like a million.
Yeah.
But luckily Batman is very smart and takes the guy back to the Batcave, gets him some sort of chemical bath and fixes him.
Yeah. So Batman saves his life and all that. And Batman's fighting a cold this whole time too, after his encounter with Mr. Freeze,
which is kind of funny.
Yeah. So that's something that really comes into play in the final battle, where he is. So Freeze is there at the award ceremony where Boyle is about to get the humanitarian award that he does not deserve. And his idea is to freeze the entire place and to ultimately kill Boyle. But yeah. Batman is coming to stop him. Before leaving, Alfred gives him a container, and he's like, what's this, tear gas? And he's like, no, this is chicken soup. It's the what did he say? Like, it's the only way to fight a cold.
Yeah, it's the only way to fight a cold.
Right.
And it's just great.
Yeah. And so he, in the scuffle with Freeze, when he's actually at the award ceremony, you know, he captures Batman, because this is something that we're also let in on, where his suit gives him basically, it triples his strength. And it also is the only thing keeping him alive. Like, he has to be in this suit to stay alive, because, well, not in the suit necessarily, but he has to be in a sub-zero temperature because of the way his body is now.
Right.
And this suit is keeping him as such. Where the soup comes into play is when Freeze is essentially crushing Batman with his triple strength. Batman tosses the soup onto his helmet, and because of the vast contrast of the heat against the cold helmet, it cracks the helmet open. And so Freeze is basically slowly dying after this helmet breaks.
He like starts suffocating, basically. Like, he can't breathe, because it's just, he can't survive in that temperature. But they don't kill him. Of course, he gets taken to Arkham Asylum, where he's given a cell that is sub-zero degree temperatures, and he doesn't need a suit. And man, it's so sad. He's sitting in there, and he's got like this little snow globe of a ballerina that I guess kind of represents his wife. Mm-hmm. And because he's always talking to it and stuff like that, because his wife's gone.
Yeah.
And it's the closest thing he's got. So he's like talking to it, and he starts like crying, and I'm just like, man, dude, like
he's telling her, well, in snow globe form, he's telling her that like he failed her, and he's begging her forgiveness. And what's great and very poetic is he was talking about like the earlier that he'd kill to walk in, you know, on a hot summer day.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, hold a warm hand.
Yes.
Here it's brought back full circle to that, where he's like, you know, after begging forgiveness, he says, like, I hope that you hear me somehow, someplace where a warm hand waits for mine. And that's what closes out the episode. And that's just it's very poetic. And it's his character to a T, because of how proper his speech is, and very intelligent person.
But man, it's such a kick to the gut, you know, like the end of that. You're just like, oh, man.
Yeah, because this is a villain and he was out to kill, but you still have compassion for him and you side with him in ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you almost kind of want Batman to not stop him.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that Batman in a way feels that way too, because though he saves Boyle's life, he had found the security footage in the archives of the company of what happened, of the accident, and what Freeze was doing that he was trying to save his wife's life, and that Ferris basically, because of what he did, killed his wife and turned Freeze into what he is. So Batman was just kind of like released the tape to the reporter, to Summer Gleason, said, you know, here's the proof of your real humanitarian kind of thing, and left him frozen. Like, he didn't dig him out of the ice. He just stopped Freeze from killing him, and then was just like, now you can fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Batman just thinks this guy's a complete scumbag too, and is just like, you deserve it, but because I am who I am, I can't let someone kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Just such a great episode, worthy of the award that it won. Yeah, I'm glad we chose this one to watch.
Absolutely.
For the last episode we watched for today's show, it was Almost Got Him, Season 1, Episode 46, and this was the episode I chose because it's one that I remember pretty vividly, but really only, I only remembered certain parts of it, but so some of it was kind of a surprise to me to watch again. But in this one, the Joker, Killer Croc, the Penguin, Two-Face, and Poison Ivy all meet at a poker table, and they're telling tales to each other of the time they almost defeated Batman.
And real quick, this is now a party game that came out recently called Almost Got Him. It's based on this episode.
Really?
And what it is, if you know the game Werewolf, that's basically what this is, which is super awesome. So you, as your group, you are playing Batman villains, but Batman is hidden amongst you somewhere, and you have to try to figure out which one in the group is Batman. So if you've ever played the game Werewolf or like Ultimate Werewolf, it's basically that, but as Batman the Animated Series.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's very cool.
This episode was also written by Paul Dini, just to, you know, jump off the last episode. Yeah. So that's a table playing cards. You're seeing them playing poker, and you're seeing Joker obviously cheating, as you think most villains would do, but especially Joker. Course.
They're all arguing about who's come the closest to killing Batman. When Poison Ivy shows up during the game and, you know, kind of knocks Croc out of his chair and takes it and sits down. What's funny is they start having a conversation with her, but in the background, you see Croc beat someone else up, steal his chair, and then bring it back to the table with everybody else. It's just quietly going on in the background. You don't hear it. You just see it happening off in the distance, which I think is great. And I gotta tell you, dude, man, some of the women in this show, like, this is a kid's cartoon, but they are drawn sexy. Like, it makes sense because, and it definitely helped things develop as a growing boy. But I've seen now that Bruce Timm, who basically, his art style is what you see as these characters. I mean, these characters are all drawn in Bruce Timm's style, his personal style. But Bruce Timm draws a lot of cartoon pinup girls in this exact style. So I'm like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, I have one of his pinup books, actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he's got several of them, and they're very cool. But yeah, like, this was like, young Chris was very attracted to all of the women of this show.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, especially like the getup that Poison Ivy's wearing in her flashback. You're just like, whoa, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so in this flashback, and this is actually cool because it falls on Halloween.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah,
her, and this is a very short kind of story of hers where she almost caught Batman, where it's kind of like she has exploding toxic pumpkins. And so he's after her trying to, you know, it's Halloween night. He's after her trying to stop her, of course, and the poison kind of takes him out. Well, she tries to unmask him at first. And I don't get why she didn't continue trying that, but I guess she just didn't care anymore. So, because after he got kind of knocked down the second time, he couldn't really get back up because the poison had gotten to him and paralyzed him in a certain way. So he pushes something, I believe, and kind of calls the Batmobile out. That's essentially what saves his life, is the Batmobile coming in.
Yeah, and like all the other pumpkins exploded and all kinds of shenanigans. And so like these little flashbacks are only like 3 to 5 minutes each. Mm-hmm. Probably less than 5 minutes.
Joker's is a little bit longer, I think, but yeah. Barely.
So then Two-Face is next, and basically what he had done is he had already captured Batman, and he tied Batman to a giant penny, and he had the giant penny on this big old seesaw thing. I thought this was such a
cool idea, too.
Yeah, and he's basically like, okay, So your fate is up to the spinny, because, I mean, that's what he does. He flips a coin.
Yeah, if he it gives lands him a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, if it lands on one side, the side that Batman is tied to, he'll be crushed and die instantly. If it lands on the other side, he won't die instantly, but it's going to just, like, break all of his bones horribly.
Yeah.
So basically, it's like, you're going to die or you're going to want to die. And but of course, like, Batman being Batman, when Harvey wasn't paying attention, he snatched Harvey's coin, which has a sharp edge to it because it's been broken and stuff like that in the explosion that made him into Two-Face. So he takes it and he starts cutting the rope that he is tied to when Two-Face flips the big thing and he's able to escape and, you know, Batman things ensue and it's all foiled.
And this is actually, this is a cool episode too, because this is where he gets the giant penny that you see in the Batcave. That's not how it was in the comics, but as far as animated series go, this is where that giant penny came from.
I don't remember. I've always wondered, because I remember, I think they addressed it in the animated series at one point, but the big dinosaur, do you remember where that came from? There's a big T-Rex in the back.
Yeah, there's always a big T-Rex. I can't remember at all where that came from.
Yeah, I feel like it happened in an episode, but I don't remember what it was. If you listeners know, let us know.
Yeah, please. That'd
be cool to know, but... the next is my favorite. This is my favorite story of all. We don't get a flashback for it, but it's Croc. And Croc's like, I almost got him.
I was held up in a quarry. Yeah.
They're like, well, what'd you do? And he's like, I threw a rock at him. Yeah. And everyone just gets all quiet. And he's like, it was a big rock.
Yeah.
And then they just ignore him and move on. Yeah.
Move on to Penguin, who had a really interesting almost got him story, because he baited him into coming into this aviary, this birdhouse.
But what is it called? It's the
aviary of doom. Yeah. But then they all
make fun of him.
Started making fun of him. And he's like, all right, the big birdhouse. And so Batman goes in because he thinks Penguin is there to try to do something else. But it was all an elaborate trap set by Penguin, who sprays him with this mist, which didn't seem to do anything at first. And he's like, so he keeps going and looking for Penguin. Penguin releases these hummingbirds who are coming after Batman because the mist he was sprayed with was nectar. The hummingbirds have poison tipped beaks, which I thought was just such a weird and interesting idea. So they're going to go straight for Batman. But the poison is like, he's like, you know, one or two, it'll just hurt. But the more that they hit you with their beaks, you're eventually going to be paralyzed and
die
dead. So that was a cool idea. Then they also bring out this cassowary, which is just this giant bird with like really sharp talons to attack Batman. And he ends up using one of the hummingbirds to stab the cassowary in the leg.
I just love that Batman stabs something with a hummingbird. Like, yeah. That's the best.
That seems like a very Adam West Batman 66 thing to do, but it totally makes sense in the context here.
I love it.
Yeah. Penguin gets away, but Batman also escapes and he's still alive. So that's the time he almost got him, which leads us to Joker's story.
Yeah, so the Joker, because he's the Joker, took over a talk show because he does that a lot in this series. He's always taking over talk shows. He had already captured Batman. He's got him in a chair that's going to electrocute him based on the amount of laughter in the room. So he's in front of a live studio audience. They start filling the audience with laughing gas. And I think the Joker honestly came the closest because it was working. And Batman, okay, it would have killed Batman.
Yeah.
And Batman could not get out. He can't get out of it. The only reason Batman survived is because Catwoman came to the rescue, which is cool because we hadn't seen Catwoman in the other episodes yet. So I'm glad that we got to see her show up in this one. And she comes in, she basically just starts causing havoc, gets Bruce out of the chair, all that good stuff goes on. But Harley Quinn, who's there with Joker, knocks Catwoman out and apparently has taken her. Like, they go back to the poker game and Joker's revealing like, yeah, he got away. But Harley has Catwoman held captive at a cat food place, and we're going to turn her into actual cat food and feed her to cats.
She's waiting to be ground into cat food.
Right. And so we find out that this is the best part because of his story and that Ivy knocked him out earlier and all that stuff. But Croc stands up and then reveals that it's actually Batman in disguise. And he had infiltrated this game hoping to get info on Catwoman. and where she is, and that's exactly what happened. And that's not only the best part, is so like the villains all like get up and they're like ready to fight though, but everyone else in this room that they're in all of a sudden stands up and is pointing guns at all the villains, because it's like the entirety of Gotham PD has infiltrated this room. Like everyone's in there. So they got all of the bad guys, and now Batman can get to Catwoman.
Yeah. And that's an interesting kind of juxtaposition against the first episode where the police don't trust him and they're right out to get him. And now they're obviously working together to stop the crime in Gotham.
Yeah. Bullock was right there with a gun pointed straight at Joker and all of them. So like, Bullock and Gordon were both there working as a team with Batman. So that's great. So that was cool to see.
Yeah.
And I like that too, because I didn't like Bullock that much as a kid, mainly for the reasons that he was against Batman. But, you know, he's arrogant. He's kind of a jerk. So to see him like now jump in and like fiercely staring down these bad guys with a gun, you're like, yeah, dude. Yeah, Bullock, get him.
Yeah. And so, he ends up going to save Catwoman, of course, since that was his mission. Harley Quinn tries to put him in a position where it's either capture me or save Catwoman. You can't do both. And then he like opens this like switch on the wall, or opens this panel on the wall and pulls down a switch, and it shuts off the power, which stops the conveyor belt that's taking Catwoman to the grinder. And he grabs Harley and he's like, oh, good call.
Yeah. And then she's like, help.
Yeah.
My favorite part actually is after the fact is, you know, the police are there, you know, doing their thing, and Catwoman and Batman are up on the roof, and they're flirting, basically. Catwoman's flirting with them, and Bruce flirts back a little bit before he takes off and kind of vanishes in the typical Batman way when she's not paying attention. And I like that she says, almost got him. It's the title of the episode, but it's in a different way, because she's not trying to kill him like everybody else is. She's in love with the guy.
Right. She's after his heart.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, I almost had it. Yeah. So I really love that. That's perfect writing.
Right, yeah, there. It was a great send-off to the show. Or not send-off to the show, but a send-off to the episode.
Yes, yeah.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we turn on our inner kid signal to call our younger selves to action. But since they're a little young to drive the Batmobile, it may take them a little while to arrive on the Bat Bicycle or the Bat Ask Mom for a Ride, but only after they do their chores mobile. But once they do get here, we'll see what they thought of Batman the Animated Series.
Batman is the best superhero ever and has all the best villains. I'd say my favorite is definitely Joker. No, wait, Mr. Freeze. No, it's gotta be Killer No. Catwoman. Definitely Catwoman. Harley Quinn. Crap, I can't make up my mind. So I'm just going to give this 5 bowls of Bat Flake cereal out of 5 with sarcastic butler marshmallows.
This show single-handedly changed the way I looked at cartoons. Gone were the days of dumbed-down toy ads, as we were presented with a dynamic series that took its audience and fantastical characters seriously. From the animation to the writing to the music to the characters to the voice acting, the list of the things that this show got right is bigger than I could fit in this short review and remains visible in all of the inspired media that followed. If it's not already obvious, I would give Batman the Animated Series 5 big bowls of Batcave Crunchy cereals out of 5. And if you haven't already seen it, which would kind of surprise me, do yourself a favor and make it happen. What? Are you waiting for a joke? You think this is a game? This is no game. This is Batman!
Oh, man, your kid got a little, he's been watching the Joker a little too much, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, he gets pretty serious about his Batman.
He's pretty serious about his Batman and his jokes, man. It's not a joke. So do you have any final thoughts on Batman the Animated Series before we get out of here?
I had a fear that when I stepped back into it, like I do some shows, that a lot of it would be rose-colored glasses or rose-tinted glasses, and I would be like, oh, this wasn't as good. It doesn't hold up as much as I thought it would, but I was completely surprised and luckily wrong about that. Like, everything about this show holds up completely as I remember, and if not better now that I'm an adult and I can understand more of the context better. For me, one of the most flawless cartoons that I think I've ever seen and ever will see, because it was the perfect time for something like that to revitalize Batman as a cartoon, because before that they had all been kind of jokey, and like we were talking about, it sets a different tone for it and doesn't treat its audience like they wouldn't understand certain things that are happening. So overall, wonderful show. And I, like I said, I recommend watching it for anyone who hasn't seen it. Please do.
Yeah, I have to agree with everything you just said. I mean, it's hard for me to think of anything else other than that to say. To me, this might be the perfect cartoon. It probably is. It's definitely my favorite incarnation of Batman. It shows off all these amazing villains and gives more light and personality, even to like the super obscure ones. Like Mr. Freeze was so obscure before the show, which makes every episode and every character so memorable. It's a show that I'm always going to remember and I'm never going to get tired of watching. And on that note, I did want to bring up two things. One, because Paul Dini is so good and at this Batman universe and his writing in general, he has a book that came out recently. Well, it's a graphic novel that he did, basically telling a story about himself, but uses the characters from the animated series in such a cool way. And I know that you've read this also, Joseph, where it's basically like something really bad happened to him. And I mean, it only, not only left him physically, messed up, but also emotionally and mentally. And so it's almost like each part of his personality is like, that's kind of fragmented from this, is represented by like one of the villains. And the whole time he's just kind of like, where was this Batman to save me? Why was there no one that could save me? And then, you know, it's kind of like the brave part of him is like becomes Batman. And then you've got like his doubt is, you know, people like the Joker, or you've got Two-Face, or you've got Harley Quinn or Poison Ivy, kind of representing all these other feelings and emotions and negative thoughts in his head. And it's just so interesting. It's just such a good story.
Oh yeah.
And there's also, for those of you that love podcasts and love Batman, there's a really cool podcast out there called the Arkham Sessions. And this podcast takes each episode of Batman the Animated Series, and there is a licensed psychologist that goes through, talks about the episodes with her co-host, and then kind of breaks down the psychological issues or symptoms that everyone's showing, including Batman. So like the first episode on Leather Wings, that's the first episode of this podcast. And, you know, she breaks down the kind of mental problems that maybe Langstrom has in wanting to perfect the human race by, you know, introducing this other thing and what becoming Man-Bat might do to his mind and the things that Bruce Wayne has problems with too. So it's a really, really cool podcast. If you like psychology, if you like Batman, the animated series, if you like podcasts, definitely give the Arkham Sessions a listen.
Definitely read Dark Knight, A True Batman Story. Yeah, the Paul Dini yes. graphic novel. I've not listened to that podcast myself, but you say it's good.
I love it. Yeah.
Okay.
Man, especially if you watch the episode and then listen to this. Oh man, it's so cool because it just takes it to another level.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's awesome. So thank you again, Thomas and Harley Sally Gurralis. So we'll continue next week with the episodes that you all picked, and they will be Harley Quinn centered episodes, and I'm really excited for it.
So that's how thankful we are that you chose this. We're going to continue yes. it for another episode.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, looks like our milk supply has now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. And once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
We'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.